Hey there, welcome to SaaS Inbound Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, head of growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business success. So today with me is Joe, CEO at Prerender, your solution to JavaScript SEO challenges. And of course, SaaS Group's one of the beloved brands that was also one of the first acquisitions. So really interested how you're getting on with it. So welcome.
Thank you.
Well, great you're here. I know you have quite a few cool announcements and you're hiring and you're redefining your roadmap. So a lot is happening. But before we go there, let's start with you and your background.
Sure. So I'm Joe, the freshly minted GM of Prerender. I come from a pretty extensive tech background. I had an interesting way to break into it, though. So I was living in the Bay Area back in 2008, decided that I wanted to go from an education in rhetoric into the tech industry. And I decided that I would drive Uber and meet someone in the back of my car that would give me a job in a tech company. So that happened after about 3 weeks of driving for Uber. Started out as a office admin, worked my way up to IT admin and then business analyst, and then the rest is kind of history. I've had about 10 years working in growth and then running SaaS companies across different industries, from project portfolio management to test management, and now Prerender.
Okay, I think that's one of the coolest hiring tips or tricks I've ever heard. Maybe, you know, next time I like to be hired in a non-traditional way. So maybe that's a tip for me. But okay, that's really cool. So tell me a little more about Prerender as well, because solving SEO challenges sounds a bit vague for some. So and you guys are doing it in a very cool way too. So maybe you can do a rundown of what Prerender is about.
Sure. So Prerender started just over 10 years ago, and it was initially to solve a problem for indexing for JavaScript heavy websites. So essentially, a lot of websites who are single page apps or otherwise have a lot of engaging dynamic content aren't necessarily indexable, or the content is not easily indexed by search engines, Google being the canonical one. So what Prerender does is we take this dynamic website, all of the pages that have all this interesting, engaging content on them, and we render a static version of that. So anytime a bot, like the Google crawler, comes to the website, instead of expecting it to act like a human and, you know, go through and render JavaScript, instead, Prerender serves a static document to that search engine so that it can do the scraping more quickly and have more of the website indexed. It's something called a crawl budget. So we help customers or companies that have websites that are really dynamic, engaging, and interesting achieve indexing success and more visibility in organic search results, because we render that in a very boring but very important way for the search engines.
Okay. And I know with Prerender, we kind of hit the ground running right after the acquisition. There were quite a few changes, especially our best kind of cost-cutting case with the AWS bill. Maybe you can talk about that. But, you know, fast forward 10 years, I would like to know what you guys are doing now and, you know, what's new with you and how you feel about the future of Prerender as well.
Yeah, so going back right after the acquisition, and this is something that SaaS Group does a good job, I think, for the companies right after the acquisition, we focus on how to build out the team, how to optimize the way the business is running. That's not necessarily possible for founders, especially if they're a team of one or two, to do. So the AWS cost-cutting example is a good demonstration of that. So after acquisition, we started to put more attention into running the business more efficiently and running it for growth and also profitability. And looking at the way that Prerender was architected, its infrastructure footprint, we realized that we were spending quite a lot on AWS. So thinking through the reasons why, what we were getting from that, and how we could migrate to a different infrastructure setup is what we did. And managing that migration, making sure it had little to no impact on customers, and in fact, actually, if it did have an impact, it would be a positive one. We actually ended up saving over 800,000 a year just by being a little bit smarter about how we deployed pre-render across different infrastructure. And we moved away from AWS for the most part. We still have some things on AWS, but now we have a combination of some more cost-optimized providers for infrastructure, and then a different architecture that's not only less expensive to run, but scales a little bit better and can give us a foundation for growth through better profitability. So that is something that we're continuing to do as we take pre-render further. So we built out more of an engineering team, we have more of a product team, and we also empowered pre-render with the necessities for growth, which is spinning up a marketing team, having a sales practice, thinking more about customer success and support. And that's something that's been really key to providing a better future for pre-render. So we had pre-render was in great hands with its founder, Todd. But after acquisition, it was really about turning up the gas, so to speak, on everything that he was doing. And we went from a very product-led growth, developer-focused tool to something that has some more rigor around how we message it, position it, talk to customers and potential customers, interact with agencies, and think about what we're building for the future.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think being, is it the biggest even brand or one of the biggest brands under a SaaS Group umbrella? I feel like you guys like really are pioneers with all that, more processes and really getting out of the startup-y kind of mode into a scale-up. So in a way, I think, yeah, you're the first movers, but at the same time, you've got all the support from the central team. And I wonder, because also in a way, central team is tailored kind of to work with earlier stages companies and really boost the growth and, be kind of scrappy and exercise this bootstrapper mindset. In your case, we need to think a bit differently. So maybe, yeah, if there are any ways that you find still working with central team and with that support useful, that would be very curious to explore.
Yeah, so I think the biggest assistance that we receive from the central team on the go-to-market side of the house is from the central marketing team. So they do a lot with our own marketing team to help with optimizing for campaigns, optimizing for ad spend, being a sounding board for new ideas, kind of working collaboratively with us on our strategy and making sure that it's the best it can possibly be. Also with a product team. So we leverage the central product team quite a lot. We have all of our design work that's done by the central team. We have a growth product manager that's coming from the central team. And even the head of the central team at SaaS Group helps us with optimizing process, making some, key improvements, thinking about how we build the roadmap, and especially lately, helping us redefine our leadership of product directly within pre-render. So the idea of having this team of experts that helps us think of new ideas, they can be sounding board, kind of sparring partners for different things that we want to try. It's been very useful. I've only been here for some months, but I've seen a lot of value in that. And then, of course, there's a lot of the boring stuff of running a business that we leverage the central team for as well. So this is finance, HR. We have a fantastic HR team, inclusive not just of running the day-to-day operations of HR, but also recruiting. So we get a lot of assistance, and I think that's really invaluable. Because it allows the team at Pre-Render, everyone from marketing to product to sales to customer success, to focus more on things that are specific to Pre-Render, while a lot of the other stuff that's the foundational aspect of running a business is taken care of by the rest of the central team and the rest of SaaS Group as a whole.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool thing that I think we do for all the brands, and that's something that actually gets noticed pretty much by every GM I talk to. So it sounds like we're doing something right there. But okay, either way, it's your team and your culture, and obviously we are working even at the acquisition level to make sure that we bring companies that are kind of culturally aligned, and we, have this wonderful no asshole policy in the team. So we want to know who we work with, and it's a lot more cohesive, I think, than it could be. But still, every team is different. You probably noticed it. We've been just recently in Marrakesh with pretty much every team, right?
Almost sure. Everyone, yeah.
Almost
yeah.
Everyone. And who do you want to see in a pre-render? Because I think you're hiring for three roles now.
Four, actually, four. Technically now. Okay. Yeah, excuse me. It's always expanding. But, I will say, just kind of backing up a little bit, one of the things that really attracted me to working at SAS Group was the culture. So even before I worked here, the little bit of research I did as a candidate, I could really tell that the vibe of this place is where I wanted to be. It's a place that I wanted to be a part of. And it's not just the no asshole component of it. That's really important too. But for me, it's a matter of empowerment. It's a matter of thinking strategically. It's a matter of having new ideas. The way that we collaborate, the way that we work together is something pretty unique in my experience with other companies. And even before talking specifically about pre-render, I have to say that was a huge component of what made me want to apply. And fun fact, the first role that I applied for at SAS Group, I wasn't chosen, but I was so insistent and I knew this was really the place that I wanted to work. It was less about a specific brand at SAS Group and more about being part of the SAS Group family overall. Now, zooming into pre-render, we want to embody all of the values that SAS Group has, the no asshole culture, rolling up your sleeves and working well together, all of that kind of stuff. And even more specifically, because for me, I'm still relatively new at pre-render, but right now we're at sort of a point of inflection. We've done well, but we need to think about what we're doing in the future. So the easiest way to describe it, when we look for new people to join our team, we want to hire wolves, not sheep. But we want nice wolves, right? So we want people who can have some independence and autonomy and who respond well to that. It's like, here are the goals. We want you to go off and figure out how you think it makes sense to work on those, the resources you need from me and the rest of the SAS Group to make you successful doing that. So we want everyone to be, feeling like they have some responsibility and accountability to make things happen, but they're supported by a group of people in pre-render, by the group of SAS Group, not just with ideas and feedback, but also the support that they need to grow professionally, to acquire new skills, to do things that can kind of further their professional career, not just their position at SAS Group. So as we think about who we want to hire, it's people that fit culturally speaking, but also people who've shown initiative and have a desire, a path for themselves to grow. So that's what we're looking for as we bring new members of the team on board.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And again, in Marrakesh, I saw all of you guys, and it's with every team, it's super nice to see how they work together. But with you, I think it was even a little bit different because you're also one of the biggest teams. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting to see the dynamic because, there are teams where it's just two people, four people. So it's kind of easier. But with you, because you're bigger, it was still very much of a team and very much a supportive environment. So, yeah.
That's a double-edged sword, too. Yeah, well, thank you. But it's also, it's a challenge at the same time because we work so well together that we have a tendency to just always be focused on helping everybody else out. And one of the challenges that we have is figuring out how to get people to focus more on their specific domain. So recently we went through the exercise as a group of really figuring out whether we have clearly enough defined roles and responsibilities, if we all understand the boundaries of our work. And the reason I think that's important is so that the right people can focus on the right things at the right time, instead of spreading ourselves too thin, which is a good problem to have, right? Everyone wants to help everybody else, and that's nice. It's a good team environment and all of that. But it keeps us from really expanding and growing and getting to the next level. If everyone wants to help everybody all the time, it means that we lack some focus. And to be quite honest and transparent, that's one of our challenges right now. Is getting people to say, okay, this is your domain. We want you to go off and work on that. Sure, ask questions. If you need some help, you want a sparring partner, whatever that needs to look like. But also take some more ownership and be really focused on your little piece of the puzzle. And that way it's a kind of an adjustment period. But over the next couple of months, we're continuing to focus on that so people can be more specialized and more focused on things that fall within their remit. So ultimately, in the end, we can really grow as an organization.
Yeah, I think this is also just a part of bringing the processes into the team because, yeah, when you're a startup, you kind of just want to know everything and own everything. And the borders are not as clear. But when you grow like this, yeah, it's interesting how it's going to play out. I'm really curious. But okay, let's talk about pre-render a little bit more, right? And
sure.
It's what you are doing, and part of your goal, I think, is to just build a more exciting future for pre-render. And I think one of the things that you mentioned to me, even in Marrakesh, is defining the future of discoverability. And, you know, that would be super exciting to learn more about.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Sure. To be sure, we're still figuring out what that story looks like. So I'm working with the team right now to start to have some of those forward-looking discussions and really trying to get things back to first principles. And if we think about that, you look at SEO, I don't know, 5 years ago, it was about how you can game the tags on your particular pages and show up differently here and there. And you have these keyword loaded posts on your blog and different things like that. It was very much a gaming the algorithm, gaming the system. But if you think about the first principles of SEO, really what you're trying to do is be found. Right? You want whatever it is your business does to be discoverable. And it's not something where you want to constantly have to buy ads, be paying influencers, all of that kind of stuff. It's really just about being available, being present in the discussions, in the digital communities, on search engines, on answer engines, right? The large language model-based search like ChatGPT or Perplexity. So we're trying to get back to this and really think about what we deliver as an SEO product. And what we really focused on previously is this organic discoverability, right? So making sure that the content on your dynamic website is indexable so that when someone searches for something that's relevant to what your business or your site has to offer, you show up in the organic results, right? Because organic results are key. I think you would probably agree. If you go and you look for something and everything that comes back to you is an ad, you will be much less likely to trust those results and click through them and engage with them. Whereas if when you look for something, it's an organic result or it's something that one of your friends mentions or you go to Reddit and ask a question and someone organically says, oh, hey, I've used this product before and it's going to be useful, you're going to trust that much more. So what we want to focus on is not just SEO, but discoverability in this holistic organic sense is making sure that our customers are visible everywhere across this fragmented digital landscape, be it an online community like Reddit or an answer engine like Perplexity or a digital marketplace somewhere, or even the old school Google, which is decreasing in market share as the days go by. But that we can make sure that you're visible, that you're findable, that you're searchable in all of those places at the same time without having to buy ads everywhere you go and pay influencers to be, you know, mentioned on social media and all of that kind of stuff. So it's early days for us in thinking about what this future looks like, but we're trying to help write the story a little bit more. And we also can't deny the impact, whether or not we know exactly what it is, of AI and how it's disrupting the search industry and all of that. So we're also trying to start that conversation too. And I think one of the most important things for us to do as a brand and as participants in this industry is first and foremost come up with a definition. So I think right now, if you go out on the street and you ask five different people what AI means, you'll have six different answers, right? And the analogy I use, and maybe this won't make it into the podcast, but the analogy I use is AI right now is like teenage sex. Everyone wants to assume that they know exactly what it is, but they're too embarrassed to admit that they don't know. And the admission that they don't know would be asking someone else, right? So everyone's talking about how AI is so useful, AI is going to be so disruptive and all of that kind of stuff. But I feel like a lot of us are missing the foundational definition, right? And what that actually means. We're just jumping ahead. We're saying, okay, well, this means that we're not going to use Google to search anymore. Or if we do, we're going to look at the Gemini search results. Okay, well, let's back up a little bit and let's think about AI literacy and some kind of speculation of what exactly it even is. So what we want to do as we start to build out this future vision is open up that conversation, because we don't want to make the assumption that we know what it is. And I'm, have to admit that even if I ask everyone on the pre-render team, we won't have the same answer. And this was something we actually encountered in Marrakesh when we were together as a group, the larger SaaS group, but hundreds of people in the same place. And I did a little straw poll asking different people, and no one could quite explain to me what AI meant in a way that was consistent across the board. So before we get to understanding what we do next and how AI is involved in that, we're trying to build the definition and start the conversation that we feel is required interacting with our customers, with prospective customers, with leaders in the search industry about settling on some kind of a static, as much as possible, definition of what AI is before we start jumping to making theories about how it will disrupt our industry, and then most importantly, how it can actually be valuable. So I think right now I see, if we take, for example, LinkedIn, I don't know about you, but my LinkedIn is full of posts about AI. And to be honest, they all follow the exact same format. It's like an eye-catching sentence and then a continuation. You have to click the more button and then it pops down into this very formulaic post. I think they're all written by ChatGPT, to be honest, with good prompts, whatever. But you see a lot of this like very formulaic, like really obviously AI generated content, that's all the same. And it's not really driving an actual conversation, in my opinion. It's just noise. So we want to really try to separate the signal from that noise first and foremost before we start thinking about what could be happening in the future, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, first of all, great definition. Totally back that up. It's definitely making it into the podcast.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
Second, that's something I noticed as well. Just yesterday, I was talking to a colleague of mine, and she was like, yeah, AI is doing this, and then AI is doing that. And I'm like, okay, no, none of it is AI. And it's just such a broad, I think, definition right now. And people are kind of like trying to pull it, tie it down to something. And explain, like, to find an explanation for themselves. But, and by no means I'm an expert in AI or know what it is exactly. But that was such an interesting moment when I realized that, well, that is definitely not it. And mm-hmm. we should pull away from this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think right now there's this huge hype cycle around it. You have a lot of investors talking about how it's going to change the way that companies are founded and scaled and all of these other things. And then at the same time, there's a lot of people that are concerned about replacement, right? Is AI going to replace my job? I listened to a really interesting podcast over the weekend that was talking about the concern and how fundamentally it's the same as what we saw, I don't know, 20 or 30 years ago with automation of factory assembly lines and all of that. And then you had a lot of people we would call Luddites or people who are resistant to that saying, it's going to take our jobs and there's going to be robots making your cars and all of this kind of stuff. And the technologists were saying, well, you need to upskill and move over and start to do something different. It's going to create a different type of job and just get over it kind of thing. Now, the interesting thing is, whether or not this is true is up for debate, AI threatens white-collar jobs. AI threatens the very technologists that previously were so callous about the disappearance or potential disappearance of blue-collar manual labor, right? And at the same time, I use ChatGPT pretty consistently, not as something that's actually doing my work, but as kind of like a partner. Like it helps me brainstorm and think of new ideas and come up with stuff that's maybe, you know, not really interesting to do, like building an outline for a podcast episode with Anna or something like that, you know, for example. But we're losing track of the fact that humans by themselves will never be the best option. Computers or AI by itself will also never be the best option. It's the story of human plus computer that really wins the day in the future. And I think part of the discussion that we want to have, not just in our industry, but maybe more broadly for AI, is how we start writing that story in a more inclusive and compelling way. Because, for example, if we think about, I don't know, ChatGPT writing all of the outbound sales emails, I get at least a dozen of those every week, and it takes me 2 seconds to realize what it is, and it instantly turns me off. I really just don't want to engage with it. So we need to be thinking beyond what the investors and these high-level technologists think about what's happening with AI in the industry and start to build a more bottom-up definition and strategy for how we work with it in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And about the social media, if it's, you know, if every word starts with a capital letter, that's AI, I won't even look in. Like, it's ridiculous. I mean, how lazy should you be to not even, like, try to make it look like you wrote it? Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. That's, yeah, I think that's a great goal. But how are you making sure that you actually, I mean, I can see that you're being a little cautious with AI and make sure that it's not just a buzzword that you really, really need to have there at pre-render for the sake of getting more eyeballs on it. But how are you making sure that, yeah, moving forward, you actually know where the value is, where you can bring value with AI? Is it customer communication? Do you have some kind of a roadmap that you want to stick to? What is it?
Yeah. So again, we're still on this journey, right? So we don't have all of the plans and exactly what our strategy is going to be. But what I'm putting together for us internally first is an AI roadmap that touches on everyone's work, right? So I want to think about AI, be it ChatGPT or whatever tools someone wants to use, being something that's a force multiplier for us. The easiest use case or application for that right off the bat is software engineering, right? So already our engineers are looking at how we can leverage code writing tools or debugging tools, different things like that, to be force multipliers for them, to help them increase their productivity and focus on things that machines can't do. Right. If we need to go and write a bunch of boilerplate code, then I've mentioned this to the engineering team already. I absolutely don't want you doing that. Right. Because that's relatively low value work. I want you to be creative software engineers, people who are thinking about problems in ways that AI just doesn't have the context or the capacity to solve and to make better. And taking the low value work away from you or taking it off your plate is kind of the first step to doing that. So we were putting together a roadmap for all of the teams at Pre-Render to use AI internally. At the same time that we're starting to open this conversation with the thought leadership series that we're going to start, not next quarter, but the quarter after, around this definition and improving AI literacy. And the idea is that internally, understanding what our AI roadmap looks like, how we can turn it into a true force multiplier for our teams, will help us drive that conversation with our customers and help us do a little bit of research by having that conversation around what it looks like in the future. But initially, what we're seeing is that, you know, already almost 2/3 of traffic online comes from bots. And those aren't all AI specific, but an increasing portion of the traffic comes from bots connect to ChatGPT or Perplexity. And we see that changing pretty quickly as well. We also see at the same time, and we were just talking about this with LinkedIn content, a lot more of the content that's available online is actually generated by generative AI, right? So more and more of the traffic will go to more and more content that's all done by, driven by, written by, posted by, published by AI, right? And so actual human-generated content will be increasingly valuable over time. And what we're trying to do is figure out how to drive that awareness, right, as we start to have this conversation, and making sure that what we build at Pre-Render helps our customers understand that, understand what they should be generating, understand where it needs to be visible in a way that we're not just helping them automate the creation of that, but really focus on what's most valuable to their customers in a way that's going to be resonant. As opposed to just saying that we're going to write a blog post every day because we just put some prompts into ChatGPT and it spits out this blog post and it's great, it's fantastic, it's all calculated to be an exact 60-second read with all the right keywords and all of this like really inauthentic feeling stuff, right? That's out. We want to change that and be thinking more about the preciousness of human-generated content, how important that's going to be. But also the idea that if 2/3 of traffic online is just bots reading content that was generated by different bots, all of that kind of stuff, what's the nature of websites in 3 years, right? Is it really going to be for humans? Like if you release a website and you know today that 2/3 of the traffic to that site are bots anyway, and that you're getting away with generating a lot of content with different bots, is your website for humans in 3 years? Maybe not, right? So we're trying to think about what that looks like. We don't have the answers to it. We're going through this in a very speculative way, but that's kind of the initial tack that we're taking in terms of how we write the new story for Pre-Render, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It's very interesting. A little terrifying as well, I should say, but...
Yeah, well, just remember, it's always human plus computer that will win the day. Right. Yeah. So I think it's really important for us to open this conversation because right now I see this as kind of like sleepwalking into a future that none of us really want, just because we're not sitting down as a group and coming up with a collaborative definition of what this looks like and how it can benefit us. We're just sort of allowing things to take their own course. We want to slow that down and be more deliberate and thoughtful about it at Pre-Render.
Awesome. All right. So maybe, you know, to kind of, because we're coming to an end slowly, and I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. And, you know, like you said, you're fairly new at Pre-Render, but maybe there is something that you have already implemented and, you know, saw the value of and saw the results. So kind of like, what was your first win?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can count it as a win yet, not in the traditional sense. So I'm a little bit of a process monster. I like to have things really outlined and organized. And that's something that wasn't really common across Pre-Render. So the first thing I did after about a couple of weeks there is implement objectives and key results. So we just are coming up on the end of the first quarter that we did that. So we established company goals and then we had strategic projects and those decomposed into objectives and key results that went across a lot of different teams. We were successful in doing one quarter with that practice. However, we were not very successful in accomplishing everything that we set out to achieve. But I was really clear with the team, and this is why I'm still counting it as a win, not just for me, but for the group, that understanding how to set goals for ourselves, how to hold ourselves accountable and maintain focus, even if we didn't achieve all of those goals, this is a learning process for us. And another piece that I'm really trying to put in place that I think we're going to be really successful with is celebrating mistakes. So I tell the team that mistakes are not failures until after the fact, and only if you decide not to learn from them. And so another reason why this OKRs practice is kind of a win, in my perspective, is the fact that we're looking at why we didn't achieve everything that we set out to, and we're using that to plan better and to work and collaborate better together in the future. So I'm counting that one as a win.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see how it pans out at the end. But that's a cool practice. And maybe, you know, being a process monster when you are growing out of the startup zone is not a bad thing. All right. Well, the last question is always about a hack, and that can be anything. It can be a hack for people who use Pre-Render, people who want to, I don't know, grow a company, people who want to be more process oriented, anything that works for you basically, and that you can share with the founders.
Yeah. So I guess I'm a really big fan of the innovator's dilemma and the innovator's solution. And one of the key things there is that it's very important to stay connected to what your customers want, but also understand that they don't always know exactly what they need. So you need to understand how to walk this fine line between building what your customers are asking for and also looking between the lines and thinking about what they really need. And being successful as any software company or any product company in general that sells to someone is understanding how to navigate that cognitive dissonance a little bit. And the way I like to sum it up is one time someone cornered Steve Jobs in an elevator, and this was after he'd been really successful with the iPhone and the MacBook Air and the obviously the iPod, and I think by that point also the iPad. And they said, Steve, how do you know what customers want so well? How are you so effective doing that? And he says, it's very easy. It's not up to them to decide what they want. It's up to me. And you need to, walk that middle ground a little bit. You can't be quite that extreme. But my biggest kind of hack, I guess, when you think about strategy and specifically a product strategy, understanding how to listen to customers and give them what they're looking for, but also be thinking about what they need either now or in the future and make sure that you're also building to that at the same time.
That's great. Yeah, that's a great hack. Maybe not a hack, but a great strategy.
Yeah, awesome. There you go.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Joe. And I mean, it's awesome to have you in the team. It was great meeting you, and really excited to see how pre-render is going to grow even more and what processes you're going to, to have there now.
Yeah. Well, thanks. It was good to chat with you, and it's really great to be here. I can see myself and the rest of the team being very successful with SaaS Group, and looking forward to the future.
That's good to know. Well, let's do it again sometime. And yeah,
sounds thanks. Good.
Thanks for being here.
Ciao.
Ciao. Take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders. And if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS, but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.